I just wanted to make sure you guys could do it.
All right, I'm doing it, but I don't know what's happening when I'm doing it. All I see is numbers.
And Carlos, I pronounce your last name. Is it Torriello?
Yeah. Whichever, you know, however you feel like it. That's why I you know, Torriello in Spanish, Torriello in English.
Yeah, the double L.
Torriello if you're an American white guy.
Gringo.
Keep it easy for the listeners. If I had, you know, served, I would have been Torriello. So, you know,
makes sense. I don't know. We had plenty of drill instructors over here that were definitely Spanish speaking.
Oh, well,
Carolino.
Yeah. Here we go. All right, we are up and running. Welcome to the pre-show. Ladies and gents, we have Carlos Torriello here with us, and we've already been chatting for, I don't know, a little over 20 minutes now, and this show is going to blow people's minds, like absolutely blow your minds with what this man has been able to accomplish, what he's going to share with us today. Like, you tell your friends, go out there now, like click all the things, like, subscribe, share this on Twitter so that it ramps up the algorithm, and, you know, retweet this thing. Get people in here to listen to this, because it's election season and we're going to be covering, I think, maybe some of the most profound technology in terms of auditing elections tonight that the world has ever seen. Like, I'm convinced, you know, I've talked to, you know, a couple other people that have been in this realm, and I like where it's going. I like what I like what Bitcoin is doing for elections, and this is sure not to disappoint tonight. That's for sure.
Thanks.
I'm busy beavering, putting this link everywhere.
Yeah, we're gonna go back out here and share all of this. This is what we do. So once we go live, everybody on the show panel and everybody else, they go back out there, they find it, they retweet it, and then it is in the interwebs, ready for consumption. I'll tell you what, though, I started looking through our Bitcoin Veterans Twitter post today, and it seems like the lives have been taken out. Is anybody else aware of lives not existing after they go live for a certain
amount? No, there is a link. You just have to document it. Like, it may not be in the feed anymore, but there's still a link. It has its own link. It's under /broadcasts, and then there's some number. So what we need to do
is... Can you share the link with me so I can send to my people too?
Yeah.
There we go. We'll throw on the chats there.
That's literally what I posted in all of our chats. Nice. I posted in all. Oops. Okay.
All right. All right, there we go. 6:55. We usually start this right around 7 o'clock, everybody. And you know, this is kind of the pre warm up show. Carlos has been sent to the basement. He's making room.
Banished.
banished to the basement. How does your spouse feel about Bitcoin? Do you just kind of like rant her ear off? Is she giving up at this point? Like, what's the deal? She's like,
Nashville was the first time she had FOMO. And so she actually sent her little sister with me. My wife's pregnant, so she couldn't travel. But every other time she was like, oh, come on, just make it stop. But now it's like, oh well.
Just make it stop. That's funny.
So she's come around. How long? I mean, and this is, I think this is just one of those great conversations that you have with every, you know, married man who's in Bitcoin. It's just, you know, what's your married story with Bitcoin? Because, you know, there are some of us who have just, you know, kind of used 300 grit sandpaper on our wives. You know, you wear them down slowly over time with significant others, right? It's like polishing a stone. It's like, hey, we may not get there today, tomorrow, even 10 years from now, but eventually we're going to get there. And then there's obviously the shock force troops out there that are young and just like trying to, hey, get Bitcoin or get fucked and get out of here, right?
So it's like the two methods. It's like the Bruce Lee. It's like the Bruce Lee method, right? We call it water on rock. Where have you seen like a rock where there's water dripping on it? Eventually, that'll wear a hole right through that rock.
Yeah.
And then the other method is you get an angle grinder.
Pause all that shit.
You are going to like Bitcoin.
So. For me, it's for my spouse, it's the drip drip method. But then for all of her friends and her family members, it's the grinder. And so she gets to experience both whenever she's in the room, which is often, actually. So, she has no choice. And now it's finally, this election stuff had been, it's a long time coming. So it's more of like, we're glad it's out. Like it's been worse than, it's been harder than pregnancy. And so, just seeing it in the real world and realizing that people actually can see the benefit is, has been, you know, very exciting. And fortunately my wife is, the best and super supportive and I'm very lucky.
It's
really, by the way, Bitcoin is ripping right now.
Yeah, we're at 62 now.
Yeah, it's almost it's up almost 13% on the day.
Yeah. Incredible to watch. Coming off of a 49.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so funny because every time it corrects, right, you get all the TradFi bros come out of the woodwork and they're like, oh, Bitcoin's dead. See, this sucks. You guys are so dumb. And then all what happens is interesting. I saw this really interesting stat the other day. In a 1 week period of time, this is when it was selling off. It was some huge amount of volume, something like 6 billion or something like that. And there was like almost $1 billion of that was basically losses. Here's the interesting thing: a tiny, tiny portion was long-term hodlers.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you that what's actually happening there is that all the new people who aren't really Bitcoiners, because they don't know why they bought it in the first place, they're just like, oh, number go up, I should probably have some of this. So then it does the roller coaster thing that it always does, right? And then all the new people who don't understand what it is yet, they eject and they're like, oh gosh, oh no, I gotta go, my wife is screaming at me, you know, sell. And then what happens is all the Bitcoiners are just backing up trucks. It's like, oh, you're set. I get to buy Bitcoin at a 20% discount.
That would be some of my best advice to guys who are new to Bitcoin, whose wives don't have any exposure to it yet, or even vice versa. You guys need to have this conversation before you put any substantial amount of money into Bitcoin. Like, she needs to be on board. She needs to understand, like, have her understand, at least you got to hold for 4 years, like minimum 4 years. Like that is your investment, you know, horizon. If you're going to get into Bitcoin, ride that thing for 4 years and you'll see everything's going to be fine after that amount of time. And it's such an easy thing, but yeah, you're right, Alex, like to see these people like, oh man, I have no conviction because I have no knowledge and things are looking bad right now. Like it's going to fucking zero. Like, man, it didn't go to zero when things were really bad. What, a few years or a couple years ago now. And you know, those guys that came in at 15,000 and were just like, nope, this is where we're putting the brakes on this thing. We're going to buy as much Bitcoin as possible. And boy, everybody else who's shorting this thing is absolutely going to get wiped out eventually.
Correct. And for those of you guys who are out there who are, you're new to Bitcoin somewhat, you're building your conviction, you're trying to figure this thing out. If the wife is freaking out, what you really, really need to do is go sell something and buy more Bitcoin. Don't tell her. just do that and wait, like, you know, 2 weeks, a month, whatever, and you'll be a, you'll be an absolute hero. Your wife will be like, where'd that couch go?
Where'd that horse go?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, Suzanne.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll think
she'll laugh. She's a good sport, for God's sakes. Yeah, oh man, don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bitcoin Veterans. It is gonna be a hell of a show. Hold on to your butts. Here we go. I'm just so damn stoked to be here every time we do this, especially tonight. This is going to be a fun one. We've got a great guest for you guys. Our guest tonight is Carlos Torriello, and we're going to get into his background here in a minute. We pay the bills, but first, this is Bitcoin Veterans. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. We are here to put you back on the mission. There is a whole host of things for you guys to get involved with. This is literally about taking guys who come out of the service, who are out of the service, and taking that nihilism and turning it into passion again, turning it into that love of your fellow man, your community, the ideas of liberty and self-sovereignty. This is the mission we're putting you on, and we can't wait to share more with you about it. If you're just new here tonight, welcome. Go share this with friends and family. Bring them in. If you're a longtime listener, we appreciate you being around. Smash all those things. Go out there and share it. And we got some sponsors to take care of first and foremost, and then we're going to get into the show. But first, Silent. Let's roll that one real quick.
All right, Silent, SLNT, one of our sponsors. Shout out to those guys. Really appreciate them. You ever consider how much information is stored on your phone? Personal data, bank account info, access to your two-factor authentication. Those apps are providing data that tells a story about you. That's why we're teaming up with Silent, SLNT. They offer an efficient and easy solution to protect your location and personal data. Their Faraday products block all incoming and outgoing signals, so no one can get their hands on your information. Simply place your data, or I'm sorry, place your device inside one of these bags, close the sleeve. That's it. You're off the grid, untrackable, and safe from unauthorized access. Hardware wallets are also mission critical gear. It's crucial to keep them safe from hackers and events like EMPs and solar flares. SLNT's Faraday bags provide an extra layer of protection for your Bitcoin. Go check out Silent today. SLNT.com/BTCVets and save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Again, SLNT.com/BTCVets for 15% off.
Before that, before we move on, I just want to take a second. I love these little things, man. And they're perfect size, right? If you just look right in here with what's going on in the world today.
Ow!
Bam!
That thing. Y'all know what that is.
EMPs and solar flares and everything else. So you throw that little guy right in there, button it up, it's done. Unbelievable company. And yeah, really happy to have those guys on as sponsors. It's a very practical product. And they make a lot of things for, you know, bigger laptops and everything else. So you need to get it off the grid. Definitely a good way to do it.
Yep. And if you really, really want to get serious about protecting that sucker, you put it in the Faraday bag. And then on top of that, you put it in some kind of hard case, waterproof, airtight, all of the things. Yeah. You know, the military guys, I mean, they're big fans of like the extra layers of redundant protection. All right. Our other sponsor, Black Sheep Ammunition. These guys are awesome. They provided us graciously with ammo for our range day at Nashville. They're a veteran-owned company manufacturing American-made goods for dedicated sportsmen and those ready to defend. They say our mission is to supply every freedom-loving American with enough firepower to get the job done twice.
I like those that. Yeah. Get it done twice. If he's worth one, he's worth two, right?
Yeah.
That's the old saying back in the day. All right. Carlino is our guest tonight. He is into all sorts of things, but finance and elections lead to Simple Proof and the startup that he helped in Guatemala become the first country in the world to protect its voting system with Bitcoin. Through clever use of opentimestamps.org, they empowered independent election auditors to verify results in real time, allowing public opinion to be shaped by data and mathematics instead of emotion and opinions. He produced the documentary Immutable Democracy, which tells the first chapter of this ongoing saga and believes that a new generation of Bitcoiner will come for democracy, but stay for Bitcoin. Carlino, Carlos, whatever you want us to call you, welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, my man.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure to have you. You've got some tech on your hands that's making real waves in Central America, man. And I tell you what, with everybody that we know in the space that's already talking about Bitcoin that want to win elections, I imagine it's not far away from getting into at least their ears. And what a great place to start it here on Bitcoin Veterans.
Well, it's my pleasure. And it's great to see you all in Nashville. Thanks for having me at the Citadel and sharing a bit of what we were about. And we're just excited to clarify any questions, go into it. Tell me how deep you want to go.
Oh, we love rabbit holes around here. So let's get started. Why on earth would you want to do anything with voting and politics in the first place? Let's just start there. Why dedicate your life to something like this? Why take the time for these scumbags and weasels and everything else, that are involved in politics? Why would you want to, get into this realm in the first place?
Well, it's a long story, and it goes to what we call in Guatemala the civilian army that protects the voting system. So my family has been involved in stuff in Guatemala. We have very much the philosophy of if good people don't get involved, then you're guaranteed to only get the bad people. Coming back from school, I got the opportunity to study at Chapel Hill, went into the public service scholar program and just had an incredible experience there learning about the importance of public service and helping other folk. And so when I came back to Guatemala in 2009, I just was looking around to see what other stuff beyond just the work stuff. I realized I'm the kind of person that just takes great joy and learns a lot from getting involved locally. And the best opportunity was this civilian army that runs our voting system. And my uncle, who I was working with at the time, had been doing this for over 20 years. And he told me, I was a young kid at that point, said, do something useful. Come and help me out at the voting center. And so he dragged me in. And I just learned about how we have this opportunity in Guatemala to run our own system. And it was a very hard won battle. And basically goes back to our last revolution in 1982, when we came out of about 30 years of being run by, democratic elections at the point of a gun, right? And when the ballots kind of just disappeared into a basement somewhere. And, since the 50s through the early 80s, that's how elections were run. And
trust us, this guy won, I swear.
Coincidentally, the military junta that ran Guatemala from the 50s through the early 80s, as a product of the the CIA's second foreign operation. So Guatemala came right after Iran. And so that group of folks just happened to always win, right? And so in, in the early 80s, the revolution that the younger cadets in the army backed and were able to remove the older folk from ruining the country, the main thing that people wanted was a legitimacy in the vote, right? If we'd been hearing about,
Can I ask you something about that? You just said something about young, did you say, were they soldiers, officers? Yeah. Who are these guys? You said that that basically helped remove some of the older folks.
Yeah. So, I'm not a super expert on it, but basically there was a series of military juntas aided by, taught and trained at the School of the Americas, which I don't know if y'all know about that, but a lot of the generals that were running Guatemala were trained at the School of the Americas and had this series of juntas from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Now, did these turn out to be good things or bad things that happened after that?
It's hard to I would say good or bad. It's a mixed bag. Guatemala was not in a good place.
Okay, let me frame it like this. Did you get freer and richer or not?
So a lot of people decided to migrate to the United States to become second-class citizens and cheap labor. So okay, that is so not. That is the end result of a lot.
Interesting.
Of but the point is in the early 80s, young officers that were being taught to become the next wave of officers managed to pull off a revolution, and they chose one of their teachers to run the government. And so it was this unique moment where the person that was running the government and preparing it for its democratic process in 85 was this strange character, and he realized that people wanted the voting system back in their hands, and he asked around and said, like, who's the best guy to do this? And they just told him, like, it's that guy, right? It's Arturo Gebrüger. It was this 80-year-old lawyer, constitutional guy that had, I think, drafted two of our previous constitutions. And he was at the end of his life, Arturo Gebrüger. And all of a sudden, it gets thrown in his lap. He gets the keys from on high saying, all right, if you could design the best voting system possible, what would you do? And it's like, are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah, you've got 6 months, so get it done. And so the proposal at the time seemed crazy. He literally said, well, what we need to do is get the government out of the voting system and empower citizens. And so he came up with this idea, this decentralized system where we would just divide citizens into about 400, 500 voting tables designed by your registered address. So you would register at the voting rolls, you'd put down an address, and they would lump you into increments of 500 people. And that voting table would be manned by citizens. And so he then turned around and said, all right, who do I know? Who are the most honorable people in Guatemala? And I will start to empower them and give them this temporary authority, make them kind of mayors for a day, and in the case of the voting districts, mayors for about 6 months of their voting districts. And so it's not an elected position. It's a kind of, it's passed on at this point, where it's just this tradition of folks being called upon. And then whenever there's a new election, they turn around and either they do it again, or it just turns into this rank system that, as people get more experienced, they start to, want to get more involved, or they stay at their voting center or their voting table. And so that's how my uncle got drafted into this like civilian army, and you could almost say conscripted, in the early 90s. And basically a bunch of his friends ran this voting center and had been the point of empowering citizens is when you give the citizens the ballots and it's your neighbor who's custodying your ballot instead of a soldier or a cop, then it's a big responsibility. And as long as people show up and take control of their voting tables, like, you know, don't tread on me, right? Like, you know, I dare you to take it from me. Right?
The other part there is that they probably know all of the people who are showing up at their voting table.
So, it's beautiful. At first people were in the 80s, they were saying Guatemala has, you know, illiteracy rates of like higher than 80%. Our malnutrition rates are higher than 50%. So people were just like, how, there's no way this is going to work. And then he did it and it worked. And then he then became this like cult figure in Latin America and was taken around all of Latin America, you know, spreading the gospel of the importance of empowering citizens to run their voting systems. And famously, some of other countries basically replicated what we did. But it happened at a unique moment when computers were in the early 80s getting more powerful, but the internet wasn't necessarily widespread. And so there was this big donation of a massive mainframe that the national authorities were going to use on election day in 85, our first election, to process all the data in order to have a real-time output. And however, everything would remain in paper, taking time. And you know, I think it was something like 3 months or so for the official result to happen, because this was back in the 80s where the people had patience. But initially, they used this mainframe to process and produce what is now known as preliminary results. In the States, the equivalent is called election night reporting. And it is essentially a way to use the media to give the public a sense of where the results are going, so that none of the politicians can come out and claim victory and kind of, you know, cause chaos, right? And so, you know, my uncle had been a part of this and he dragged me into it. And, you know, it's me coming in 2011 was the first time I served in the voting system. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm, you know, given this box and it contains all of my neighbor's ballots, right? Like 400 to 500 of them for all of the elections. I have the voting rolls and, you know, you're charged with bringing at least two of, you know, solid people with you. You have to show up at 4 a.m. It can't be people that aren't going to, you know, not going to show up. And you're just going to have to work nonstop from about 4 a.m. through about, you know, midnight and just process this on behalf of others. Right. And so,
wow.
It was this beautiful experience where, you know, you get up, you sing the national anthem with all of these folks and you realize, wow, like I'm responsible for this. If I mess this up, it's on me. I can't blame it on the state, right? Like I'm the person that has been empowered to do this. And it was a unique experience when in Guatemala, I was raised in the 80s and 90s, where we have a lot basically going through the end of our Cold War. And it's a lot of security issues. You know, I had people that were kidnapped in my neighborhood, and basically all these walls start to go up when society, you know, breaks, right? Then you're told, you know, you can't play out in the streets and you just go to school and come back home. And so meeting people outside of my, you know, bubble was not something that's usual, right? And so it's unfortunate that as society starts to break apart, the first thing that happens is we're kind of walled off into these bubbles, and it's very hard to get people from different walks of life to just meet each other on you know, basic terms, right? And so Guatemala lost that in the 70s and the 80s, and I was a product of that. And it, for the first time at the voting system, I was surrounded by all these people from all walks of life, you know, realizing how much of a minority my little socioeconomic bubble was, and realizing that there's just solid good people everywhere. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you know, what language you speak or what your culture is, like usually, especially people that show up at 4 a.m. to work on for the benefit of their neighbor, they're usually good people, right? And so I just experienced this opportunity, and I, you know, also like numbers and math. And so just the process of adding everything up and going, you know, being the owner of my table and having to sign off. And if I did any funny stuff, I would be thrown in jail. You know, cops are standing right outside. So, you know, witnesses all over you, everything's open. So it's just this beautiful system, famously referred to also as the civic party. Guatemala famously is not a safe place. But on elections, everyone's out in the streets. And suddenly when everyone's out in the streets, it's the safest day, right? And so it's like the one time that people get to go out and just, you know, not get worried about getting mugged and stuff because everyone's out on the street, right? Because criminals are actually a small portion of society. And so when everyone's out in the streets, you know, criminals don't come out because they can wait till the next week, right? And so, free market kids, right on, Scott. So anyway, I went through this experience. I was, and it changed me, right? I just realized there is always an opportunity to rebuild and to meet people, and you shouldn't jump to conclusions about who that other group of people are, right? And I, you know, came back in 2015 to do it again, dragged even more people to volunteer, and then in 2019, my dad and my cousin ran for Congress, and they reached out and said, "Well, could you give us some money?" And I said, "Nope, but what I can do is I can audit the system to make sure that they don't steal it from you." And that's when I graduated from being a volunteer at the table and doing what I now see as basically a mining node, doing all the hashing, or maybe a coin join coordinator and coordinating the votes for folks. I graduated into being a political party witness. And then my responsibility became auditing and realizing, you know, throughout this saga, I'm learning about Bitcoin and having a hard time because, you know, who has an easy time of grokking Bitcoin? Like the process of going through this taught me the value of what a node does, right? It's like, I think a lot of folks have a hard time understanding why nodes are so important, right? Like, why did the block size war end the way that it did? Like, why do nodes actually enforce the network, and why should you run a node, right? And being in the voting system and being a political party witness, I understood if you don't have people checking that the rules are followed, and you don't have a lot of people checking that the rules are followed, then everything kind of becomes meaningless. Yeah. And so that's,
I got to tell you, you know, when your family's running for Congress, you know, this is not foreign to me. And, you know, they come and they ask you for money, and you come back and say, "I can do you one better. I can audit the entire damn system." I'll tell you what, man, had somebody come to me and said that, I would have been, I would have kissed him on the damn mouth. I really would have. I would have been so happy, especially in retrospect, because, you know, here in the state of Georgia, we got some issues with voting. this was super apparent to me the first time I ran. My entire district had been turned in by about 8:30, 9 o'clock, except my race. We've been leading in the polls by a huge amount, 70 to 30%. And guess what? Those poll numbers come in at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're exactly opposite now. So this, you know, the incumbent in the Republican Party at that point walks away with a race, and you're like, was it cheating? Probably. Can I prove it? I have no idea, because I have no way to audit this thing in either real time or going back and doing, you know, some sort of forensic scrub to see what's going on. And this is something you cracked. Like this is something, I mean, for everybody that's out there, you know, all the talk for since 2020 that we've had stolen elections here in the United States, like it's been going on a hell of a lot longer than that. But this literally could be implemented in the United States before this election. We have at least two presidential contenders who are out there right now, you know, getting, you know, that have been on stage in Nashville talking about making a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Man, what a hell of a time and what a hell of an opportunity for anybody who gives a damn about an election to start taking this message right now and broadcasting it out into, you know, the ether. I mean, this is if you're out there, this is what has to be done. This has to start getting a life of its own and going. And Carlos, I'd be really curious, you know, if you've got some examples on kind of how you can show us how this works, you know, by doing that screen share, that would be, I think it starts to really click when you start seeing exactly how this works and how ingenious it is. And really, it's not too complicated. He's on mute.
You're muted. There you go.
Yeah. Tweet.
Well, that's very nice of you. I think it could be implemented in the United States. We've proven in Guatemala, you know, we've gone from zero to one. The hard part is done, I think. So we just need someone to follow. So, I mean, I have my screen up. I don't know if you can bring it.
Yeah, let's go ahead and ask.
There are intricacies. So for everyone listening, I do want to caveat, like, this isn't JPEGs on Bitcoin. I am not asking you to buy my token. This is pure hardcore on-chain Bitcoin. And, you know, if you have time, some Lightning. And so it's like, do not think also that this is like putting votes on the blockchain, because a lot of people immediately kind of I could see people's face. It's taken me a while to get people to drop their defenses and actually like listen to this. So what I'm showing you now is the election night reporting system of the Guatemalan voting system. So it's anyone can do this. You can go to trep.gt. That's TREP.GT. And then you can click either of these bubbles and you'll get taken to our voting system. This is from 2023, the June general election, where we had over, so we have 9.2 million registered voters in Guatemala, but only about 4.2 million showed up. Over here, I can select between the elections. I'm looking at the presidential election right now. As I go over here, I can see the number of documents that have been processed. It's claiming that 99% of the documents have been processed and are ready to review. Further down, you can see...
Pause right there.
Sure.
I've got to interject some comments. Can we go back just for a second? Because I want this to really hit home for people in a very impactful way. You guys have 9 million people in Guatemala that voted. It's saying that 99.12% have been counted and really, you know, done the diligence in terms of authorizing each and every one of these votes. Georgia is about 10 million people. When they talked about not having any voter fraud, whether it was Georgia or any other state, they never quantified that. And the fact that you have that quantified in a piece of data right there from the very beginning that says 99.1%, that's at least a quantifiable amount instead of this, you know, ephemeral idea that, oh, you know, there's no irregularities in voting. Like, okay, well, what do you mean there's no irregularities? Is there a mean for this? Is there an acceptable amount of irregularities? Because there's got to be at least a few here and there. And you guys have actually already quantified that. That is monumental to the voting process itself.
So yes, I'm very proud of the Guatemalan voting system. That's why I continue to serve every time I get a chance. But I can do you one better. There's a button here that says database, and so you can literally. Let me see if I think I need to zoom out a bit. But basically, all that I'm showing you, the election authority is publishing a database that I can click on and download in CSV format, so that all of the data is in tables.
Oh my God. Like, that is so, that's unfathomable in America. And like, literally our elections at this point are very much like, trust me, bro, this guy won.
Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert on US elections, but this is how Guatemala works. And then further down, we start to get into the actual, so this is the front end of the database that you can download. Here's like all of these are all the clowns in my clown world, right? We have the opposite of not enough choices. We have all of these dudes, competing. It's literally like, it doesn't fit on the screen, right? It's so many choices.
You could vote for all of those people.
You could vote for them and more, because they canceled like 7 candidates right before the election. So it should have been even bigger than this.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But again, I'm a Bitcoiner, so don't trust verify. How do I know this isn't bullshit? I downloaded the CSV file. But then there's this thing here that says results by mesa electoral or voting table. And so you can pick any number between 1 and 24,500. So what's your favorite number between 1 and 24,500?
11,399.
Boom. So I just clicked that. And so now instead of looking at the national totals, I'm looking at table number 11,399. In voting center number 1528, in these districts and et cetera, right? So now, instead of looking at hundreds of thousands of votes, I'm looking at 21, 3, 23, 6, much more manageable. But again, cool database, bro, like, fancy bar graphs, very 1990s. Thank you. But I want to verify. And so all the way down here, this website has this button that says Ver. I click that. And now what I'm looking at is the actual JPEG, you know, photograph of what the people at the table physically signed. So what I was mentioning before of the work that I did,
Okay, when you say the people who signed it, you're talking about the citizen who's responsible for making sure that this is done correctly, right?
The citizens, right? So you see up here, it's Zaudi, Maria, and De Dilson.
Right, it's you and your two compadres that
exactly
got it. So this is basically a proof of custody document. Like this is a this is the part that they aren't willing to show anybody in America.
Your words, not mine. So essentially what this is these people were there physically. They showed up at 4 a.m. They opened up the box. They had over 400 votes. They checked that everyone showing up was assigned to their table. What we do to correct for the double spend is we tell people, show your hands. And if you've got ink on your hands, you don't get a ballot. Because as soon as you get your ballot, they put in the volunteer puts indelible ink on your fingers. And so it's very cheap. Double spend problem solution, because in the analog world, the double spend problem is simple.
Oh. Right?
We did this in Iraq in 2004. I mean, literally, we were
incredible.
I mean, they literally, everybody was walking by all the Humvees and everything while we were out there showing their finger that they had voted. And
this would, point, this is what would prevent like all the millions and millions of duplicate. Oh my gosh.
Well, but then you don't get ballots. It's so, yeah. Well, cheap solutions for developing world, right? We don't got money to do it fancy way, but we still need to reach consensus. And so, what these people are saying is, in this case, 210 citizens showed up out of the 400. And their votes were distributed in this way amongst all the competitors. And so it's handwritten data by the people at the table.
Yeah, three people who signed it that this is
accurate. not only the three people that volunteer, because the citizens are the mining nodes. They or you could call them the coin join coordinators, because this is effectively a public document, but you're not sacrificing people's right to privacy and secrecy on the ballot. You're protecting that by mixing people's votes amongst all the rest. And so that's the other point here is democracy is an opportunity to teach people the value of privacy and why we have to fight for privacy tools in the hands of everyone, because they protect the individual from prying eyes So literally this document joins everyone's votes. So you can check all the data, but they did this counting one by one in front of people who were sent by the political parties. And so in this case, you have the three mining nodes signing off, but then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 political party representatives were there physically and all verifying and signing off. So they are the validators or the node operators. And so in this unique case, 210 votes were overseen by at least 9 people who were all physically present, who could also take their own picture and take a physical hard copy
chain of custody
receipt of it, confirming that if something funny were to happen to this, then everyone has a copy and you can recreate it yourself, because don't trust verify, right? It was a system, like I said, Arturo Herbrucher, the man that built this, I consider him like a Satoshi Nakamoto figure, but in the legal realm, right? And so law is just slow code, right? And so what this guy built was this consensus algorithm that uses fancy cryptography, but with paper. And it's possible to do cryptography with paper. And so the issue is that, and then I was saying in 2019, and this is fantastic, like this is how I checked in 2011 and 2015, that my table had the results that I took at the table. I then went online that same night, and before I went to bed, I made sure that my data was the same that I had, right? Because don't trust, verify, right? So, but then in 2019, I'm plugged into the system, and this system falls apart. Right. Like you literally have anchors on the news media reporting live with this thing. Right. Like imagine if I go back to the national stuff. Right. You have people on TV saying, oh, so, you know, we're looking at the data and here's the map. And it's like, oh, green and yellow. And then it's like the system just collapsed and it was zero. And they're like, oh, we lost the feed. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, the feed came back on and, oh, it's no longer yellow in the lead. It's now purple. And then, ooh, they lose the feed and then they bring it back up and, oh, pink is on the lead now. And so it was just madness in 2019 for the first time since, you know, the 70s when, you know, we went to war over this. We had legitimate concerns, not by the left or the right, but by absolutely all of the clowns, you know, competing in this thing. Right. So. I just felt like the system was falling apart and I was connected to it and I saw the data changing in real time. So I was, you know, just very concerned.
We lost the feed.
But so when they finally brought it back up, it was 6 days after the election. And so as an election auditor, I was asked to trust the data that was 6 days old. And told, yeah, trust me, bro, like I wouldn't lie to you. And so I, you know, it was very disappointing. I tried to help my, you know, people that were running, but I basically told them, like, there's no way I can tell you whether or not they stole the 2019 elections. I built a bunch of open source code to try to, you know, check it, but I failed miserably. And I realized my problem was I reacted to the problem. And this is how the system gets you, right? They force you to invest a bunch of money into like campaign stuff and they, you know, hit you with lawsuits to try to get you off the ballot. And so you're not thinking about the day after the election when you need to audit it, right? And that your audit needs to be in real time because in this day and age, the media is going to get people to an opinion before you get a chance to. Yeah. So if you're not thinking about this now and you don't have a plan for auditing the election in real time and you're running, like, don't.
So in America, the way they do it is that on election night, they wait till everybody is so damn tired that everybody thinks they know who the winner is. And then everybody goes to sleep. And then in the dark hours of the night, the switcheroo happens. And then in the morning, everybody wakes up and they're like, how the hell did that guy get elected? It was clear who the winner was the night before.
Yeah, we're such a damn banana republic.
We're so screwed up, dude. It's the worst.
Well, I think there's always a chance to improve, and we can't give up, right?
Low bar, right? Like there's not a lot.
We're not giving up, Carlos. We're just talking shit about our country because they really screwed things up here. We're definitely not giving up, though. That's why we've got you here talking about it, right?
Appreciate it. And so in 2019, they changed the data over at least 6 days. There was no way to trust it. And so I became kind of viral with a bunch of other friends. And we made a series of recommendations saying, look, you guys need to use I suggested Bitcoin. And they were like, oh, we're not going to, you know, favor your company. So we need to make it more broad. And I was like, okay, blockchain. They're like, yeah, sure, blockchain. And so we submitted a recommendation of like,
it's magic.
You should use blockchain certificates to ensure that if anyone alters data after the fact, that is clear. And so that was our work in 2020. And it kind of laid the groundwork. And as an election auditor, I basically just lied in wait, right? And it's like, I lower my time preference. I pray to Satoshi and all will be well. And I just got my gear ready. And so 2023 rolls around. Our election is in June. And some friends reach out to me and say, look, we want to build what we recommended to the authorities. And I said, well, I want to use it as an auditor. And so I you know, helped them. Advise them on what would be best, but I told them there's no way the election authorities are going to go for this. Like, why would an election authority take away its own ability to change the result? Like, in my mind, right. That was like,
especially not if they're work. Corrupt, right? They're never going to agree to that.
And they were like, you shouldn't jump to conclusions. You don't know who these people are, what their motivations are. I was like, all right, I don't trust them. I'm going to be ready to catch them. So it's the co-founders of SimpleProof.com. It's Rafa Cordon and Christian Lowenthal. They just went to work and pitched the authorities on the fact that because these are all published to the internet, like, what's keeping someone from downloading one of these and then creating a million fake ones on social media? Like, there's literally nothing stopping people from doing that. And so that's what scared the authorities, realizing, wow, now with AI, we could really lose control of this. And they needed an insurance policy, and that's, you know, why they included this rather curiously orange button, right? It's like, I wonder why so orange. And so in 2023, this button takes you now to the Immutable Backup Service. And so everything I've showed you is the National Authority's official election nights reporting system. But the documents that are the primary source data, right? The primary source data that you could use to audit the election, those are published to the internet, but immediately backed up with this service, which is the company that I now work for, Simple Proof, and their Immutable Backup. And so what Simple Proof is doing is saying, so on election night on June 25th, 2023, this JPEG appeared on our database at 10:59 p.m. GMT minus 6, which is the time zone of Guatemala. And so immediately what Simple Proof does is it takes the SHA-256, which for those that don't know, you know, you could consider it like a fingerprint, which is why we have this little thing here. And so how we told, you know, explain this to the lawyers running the election authorities is like, think of it as a fingerprint. Like each document, each file has like a bunch of data, but you could take its fingerprints, and it's a unique fingerprint that differentiates from everything else. And then through the open timestamps protocol, we confirm that information on the blockchain. And so I wonder what blockchain, you know, why so orange? So that by 12:19 a.m. on June 26, this document has now been confirmed on Bitcoin. This is a unique case, an outlier of there being more than an hour, because sometimes Bitcoin blocks take time and the open timestamps calendars sometimes have issues, but we have redundancies. But the point is, you know, it's not perfect. It's an hour and 20 minutes after they were created, but you know, that's a lot less than 6 days.
It's a lot less than overnight, for God's sake.
It's a lot less than 6 days. I mean, this is where you start getting into the how do they game this system, right? And yes. The thing is, if someone wanted to go to a tremendous amount of trouble, they might be able to game it, but it would be pretty dang hard, and it would take a lot of work, and it would be nearly impossible if you've got a lot of these things.
So it's like, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Forget of all, you know, about all the blockchain hustlers that have sold you on, you know, blockchain fixes all the voting, and just focus on, we can make attackers have to work a lot harder. You can eliminate 99.9% of the attack surface and force people to go through a single door, a single window of opportunity, which is election night, and then just put all of your defensive systems, you know, targeted to that one moment in time. And so it's a lot harder to get through. But if your vote, your system is basically wide open and anyone can walk in at any point in time for however long they want, then it's a lot easier and much, much harder to defend. Right. So,
okay. So I'm really glad that you took the time to explain how the voting tables in Guatemala work. Mm-hmm. Because if you had not explained that, a person could just say, well, we just, you know, we're just going to create a fake document and replace the one that's on the chain and say it's that one. But if you've got the record with all the signatures, right, you can later go back and there are people you can actually arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a crime, correct? I mean, it's a crime if you do this. And now that you have verification per the Bitcoin blockchain, where you can go back, and this is so, I don't have the words for how amazing this is. It, ladies and gents, if you don't understand the genius of this, it's like being able to go into any, let's just say, small city in America and audit every vote possible right then within an hour and a half. You can verify everything. I mean, it's just, it's got to be one of the most, this changes voting forever if it catches on.
I hope so.
It does. This is incredible.
It doesn't make it impossible to game. It just makes it really, 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 really hard.
And there are no silver bullets.
Yeah.
And we've been consequence too. Like literally, you can be tracked down if you're going to be that person that tries to, you know, falsify this type of information. I think that's the real key here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it goes hand in hand, right? It's like the whole custody question with Bitcoin. It's like or any other like asset that's worth a lot of value. The way you prevent shenanigans is you create a situation that would require criminal collusion against many amongst many people simultaneously, and that reduces the odds of it occurring. Plus, if you know who they are, instead of having, like in America right now, you could have one voting polling place, whatever, where, I don't know, you could have thousands and thousands and thousands of people go through there and drop their thing into the black box, and whatever the hell happens to it after that, who friggin' knows, right? But if you had like a smaller situation like what you're talking about, I'm not even sure if this is doable in America. We've got a lot more people, but I don't see why it wouldn't be. You just have to have enough volunteers, right?
Well, that's why it's, I think I love my system so much in that it means that in order for the state to continue and to achieve its a successful transfer of power, it has to stoke the fires of an active citizenry, you know? And so that's why I believe that democracy can beat dictatorships, is that it forces, like real democracies that are done well, where everyone trusts the election result, forces you to teach people about cryptography and consensus, and why mathematics is better than guns at the end of the day. But you know, then for us as Bitcoiners, it's like it provides this avenue to reach people with a different touch point. I did want to say, for anyone who's listening who thinks that we are putting JPEGs on Bitcoin, please visit opentimestamps.org. This is the underlying protocol that we are using. It's been around since 2016. I don't know a single toxic maxi Bitcoiner that is against open timestamps. If you have a problem with open timestamps, please tell me. Like, I'm on Twitter. Tag me. Let's have a discussion. Everyone I've talked to approves of this because it's a very efficient use of the Bitcoin time chain. And it's very easy for individuals. You literally just go to opentimestamps.org. You go down here where it says stamp and verify, and you drop in any document that you have on your desktop, and it'll just timestamp it to Bitcoin. And then you get a link to download a proof file, which you download on your desktop. And all you need to do is wait about a day, and tomorrow just drop in the proof that you just sent it today. And it will give you the option to download the updated proof that has now been confirmed on Bitcoin. So this is cheap technology to protect your most sensitive data, particularly anything that could be used against you in a court of law. You use open timestamps, and it's free for individuals. And many Bitcoiners have been using it since 2016, and it doesn't cause blockchain bloat. Now, we simple proof, what it is basically realizing this has been around for ages. Why aren't people using it? And it's because just like Bitcoin, institutions or governments it might be open source, but getting people like big institutions to use something that's complicated requires making it easy. So simple proof is essentially the dumbed down corporate bureaucrat version of this, so that it's just, you know, clicks and very simple, right? So that's what we're doing. We're a company that's making it very, very simple for even, you know, the largest bureaucracies in the world to protect all of their data. And it's the unique application, the first application is elections, but there's no reason we couldn't do this for essentially all public records. And we believe, and we want to build a future where the state issues the records, but they lose the ability to change them after the fact. And I don't know of anyone that can argue in favor of changing history after the fact. So that's why we win.
If we had something, you know, with that could document what governments do in real time, where it was a transparent record of everything, that'd be great.
They would have to be mandated to keep that type of record. And yeah, I mean, you get rid of the CIA highlighter, you know, and everything else at that point. And now it's like, I mean, where they say secrecy is redundant to a democracy or public, yes, either way. Yeah, this changes it.
And so we knew this was going to be historic. So we actually filmed a 15-minute documentary that you can watch for free at film.simpleproof.com. It's called Immutable Democracy. But just going back to what we did in Guatemala, it's that JPEG. You don't need to trust us. You literally can download the source file for yourself, check the hash yourself, or compare it visually to the original, whatever you want. But then you download the proof file, and it's called the OTS file because it stands for Open Timestamps File, which is the proof, and you can view it here. This is the gnarly cryptography that is behind all of this, so I don't expect you to follow along, but it's basically SHA-256s appended to each other and then SHA'd again and hashed again and again and again. But you know what we believe is we have to make cryptography easy to understand for even, you know, a government bureaucrat. And so
oh my god,
we basically just draw it out for them where here it is, right? It's like
great, like this is like simple, explain it to me like I'm five, monkey level.
Exactly. So here what you're looking at here is that fingerprint. It see it starts with D5342, right? And I go back to my file and I see it's D5342. So I'm looking at the same fingerprint, the same SHA, and all that we're doing is visually showing you what Open Timestamps proof files do, which is basically this hash goes up to this mother hash, and it's a combination of two SHA-256s together to produce a new SHA-256, a new hash, a new fingerprint, and then it's just strung up together. And oh, with this proof file, it's just color-coded so that you can easily see the trail that combines this unique hash into this Merkle tree, it's called, all the way up to the Merkle root. And the Merkle root just has this new final SHA that you can copy. But the difference between a Merkle root and the Merkle leaves or the Merkle tree is that it includes a transaction ID. So if you're running your own node, just copy this transaction ID. And if you're not, we include a very simple link here to mempool.space. Shout out to the Wiz and company. And so you're no longer looking at our database. You're now on the Wiz's database, mempool.space, or your own node. And here it is, the confirmation for that transaction that in this case is actually earlier than the one that we're showing. So see here we have 1219, and that's an error on our systems. Basically, you can see this transaction was confirmed earlier at 1130. So actually even earlier than what we're publishing, because we have several of these going. And then let me just see. I don't know what they did to the mempool. It changed it up on me. New mempool space. Oop, there we go. And so again, it's the same transaction that has a timestamp of June 25th at 1131 p.m. But if you go down into the details of the transactions, you can look for the SHA of the Merkle root, which again, here you see 58DC99. I go back and it's 58DC99. And so this is literally how open timestamps work. It's the op return function has been around, I think, since Bitcoin's been around, right? And so op return allows you to write a little memo space in the transaction. Think of it like when you're writing a check. Op return is a space where you write the memo, you know, reference, tell yourself what you spent your money on. And so in that memo space, there's enough space to include a SHA-256, which just so happens to be the Merkle root of this Merkle tree. And so in one single Bitcoin transaction, we have the ability to essentially timestamp a trillion files or more, right? There's literally no upper limit on the amount of files we could do. And so instead of, you know, using the maximum amount of block space, like an ordinal or an inscription that's trying to use up the entire block.
Okay,
I'm gonna
pause you there, because for the last probably 10 minutes, you've used a lot of words that I think most human beings don't understand. So Let's do this. Don't apologize. This is amazing. I know there's a lot of people that work in Bitcoin, cryptographers, people who understand the technology who are going to understand what you just said. Can you drop the link to your documentary in our internal chat here that we've got for the stream? And I'm going to tag that on the bottom of this broadcast link, because that
I don't know if you guys caught it, but Scott was giving away spoilers, you know, beforehand. He said, just wait until you hear about the Merkle tree and the final hash. It's just like, oh, here we go.
Mind blowing, man.
I don't know what to go back through, but basically What that means is that Open Timestamps uses
the link Bitcoin. Is film.simpleproof.com.
Indeed.
Okay, thank you.
You use Bitcoin as a clock. And so the beautiful thing about Bitcoin is that it is the best clock. It is the one clock that no one controls. It is the one clock that is never off. And no matter what you could possibly do to mess up your data, Bitcoin is not wrong because no one controls Bitcoin. And you cannot say that about anything else on Earth. Therefore, if we use the clock to date digital data, for example, election results, then whatever election results are published to the Bitcoin blockchain essentially become immutable, is a sexy right. word.
So what you're saying is that if we will have a record up to maybe not minute by minute, but pretty close of the entire process on election day / election night. And if some knuckleheads try to change it all at 4 o'clock in the morning, there will be a record of that too. Assuming they agree to follow this system. And then you can basically say, this is where the shenanigans happened.
So I'll use the example of Guatemala. So what I've been accused of in Guatemala is all you guys have done is blockchain wash election fraud. So what happened was this document that I'm showing you, someone prior to getting it on the website, doctored it and changed it. And now they're saying that because it's on Bitcoin, it's real. And it's a valid concern. And like I said, there is no silver bullet. You cannot replace, like, this isn't the end all be all. This is just an additional tool inside functional democracies that make it harder for attackers to get away with, you know,
right. Crime. But in that example though, mm-hmm. right? Someone doctors one of these, it's basically a vote count. It's signed by 9 different people and they say, this is the actual thing. If they retain the original evidence, if they have the boxes of the votes themselves, mm-hmm. they can go pull that out.
Exactly.
They can open the box up. And like, if their doctored version says, okay, clown B actually won the election and here's where all the things are, you go open that up. And then if it's not right, if there's something not right there, you've got 9 people you can arrest.
But well, it gets that's even better. I can't wait to show or have you show this next part, Carlos. It gets so much better than just going, oh, here's our documentation tree, and here's where they all fucked up. This is I want to say one of the more ingenious sides of what they're doing. The gaming side of this, Carlos, are you ready to?
Maybe not quite yet, because I do want to hammer something home. And it's because this is what I'm literally accused of doing in Guatemala is, you know, blockchain washing people that did that. And like you said, Alex, yes, you could always go back to the paper record. That's why I encourage you all to watch the documentary, because guess what the authorities did in Guatemala? They disappeared the paper record.
Disappeared the paper record.
Well, the justice system invaded the election system and yeah. took over the paper.
That happened so now in America too.
The evidence is tampered, and so you can't trust anything.
Yep.
However, and this is why it's so important.
All the routers magically disappear. All the votes, the ballots themselves magically disappear. It's
But this is what I ended up pulling up another example, another random one. This one actually has the 3 signatures from the citizens, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different people. So it's 11 people signed this document. Mm-hmm. So all of those, what are the odds that one out of those 11 people has their own picture on their phone? And so that's where the citizenry, if they're allowed access to it, if it's theirs, and that's why I love my system and I built this to protect it.
Oh, so they can all literally snap a picture of it. And if they come up with some bull shiitake later, they can be like, yo, that's the original.
Yep. And so if someone managed to change the document that ended up on the internet, all that they've done is made their crime public and immutable.
Right.
And you can very easily track down who had access to this digital file, and you can actually prosecute individuals instead of just, you know, blanket, fight over stuff. Right. So it's does that make sense?
Yeah. It gets rid of Fanny here in Atlanta. That's for sure.
Yes. So basically that's why, essentially what this means is we can use Bitcoin as an anchor of truth in a sea of lies, right? Simple Proof's mission is we want to uphold information integrity.
Hey, Shane, what do you think about getting this in front of some senators? Like, there are some senators that are friendly with BV.
Yeah, of senators, we need to get it in front of the guys over at the MAG who are friendly with the Trump campaign. I feel like you guys have already started talking to the RFK campaign. I mean,
not enough. So please, yeah, send them my way.
This is one of those times where Bitcoiners, you know what to do. Like, hey, if we can get this into the right hands with the right people, and you know, this is going to be on my laundry list of things to do this week and next week.
What's the name of that gal that got robbed in Arizona?
Oh, that was short hair. I know exactly.
Yeah, show it to her.
Carrie Lake. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. This is, time is of the essence, right? Like, now is an opportune time. And there are, you know, and I don't think, oh boy, here we go. I don't think either of those people right now, I think Trump would jump at the idea of having something like this. I think RFK would absolutely jump at this. And the fact that it's, you know, hammered into the Bitcoin blockchain. Well,
yeah, but the issue, you know, in America is getting that, you know, the federal elections are all conducted locally.
Yeah. And
so you've got, you know.
Well, that's a good segue to our challenge to Bitcoiners. And as you can see on the screen, is Uncle Honey Badger wants you to protect the elections with Bitcoin. And so what we are challenging Bitcoin meetups is to a race between Bitcoin meetups to see who can help us get this into the election system first. And whoever wins, we promise to send a documentary film crew to their town and film this happening, because just like the documentary that you can watch, which was historic, if this happens, this will be historic, and we want everyone to know who the Bitcoiners were. And so if you're not a core developer and you haven't put, you know, commits into Bitcoin and etched your name into the code forever, well, this is a way that it's just about the social layer, right? Like, you could become the group of Bitcoiners that will always be known as the guys that got Bitcoin into the voting center and sent the message that chaos around elections is a choice at this point. And yeah, Bitcoin is our anchor of truth, that who cares if people go on social media and create millions of fake things and misinformation. You use Bitcoin to very quickly differentiate the madness from the noise.
I trust a lot more the signal from Dominion. The noise. Sorry. That's for damn sure. Yeah, I mean, we all know who owns Dominion, and those guys, man, boy. I am so blown away. All right. Can we get into the game side now? Because
okay, before we do that, it's 8:03.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do a quick shout out to our other two sponsors, and then we'll keep rolling here. So, very quickly, want to shout out Solo Satoshi. These guys have made a big splash. They were there at Nashville. They're creating these Bitaxes at very affordable prices. And their objective is just to basically, and we want to get a Bitax in every home, right? Because if there is some major problem with large-scale industrial mining, for example, if someone hostile to Bitcoin is elected in the United States of America in November, and they basically go down the road of trying to ban mining in America at a large-scale level, you know, the hash rate may drop off, but here's the thing. You got 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million people running these little solo miners that decentralizes the network and further secures it. Big fan of what these guys are doing. Go check them out, solosatoshi.com. They're also at solosatoshi on Twitter. Also, a shout out to Punch Plates. This is basically steel plates for your seed phrases. There, Shane's got one right there. Thing I love about these things is that they're basically a bunch of dots on a metal plate. You're punching a dot into it to create your seed words. And normies will look at this and be completely and utterly confused as what the hell it is they're seeing right there. That's one of the reasons I really love these things. Go to punchplates.com. I've used them. I highly recommend them. And I'm anybody who asks, like, what is your favorite like steel plate? It's literally these guys. By the way, I was recommending them way before they became a sponsor of our show. They're just the best.
Love punch plate. And they're cheap, guys. They're way cheaper. They're like 25, 30 bucks compared to, I don't know, $100 for some titanium piece, whatever. Yeah, they like, yeah, go get a punch plate for God's sakes. All right. Back to the show. We're good.
Cool. So that was all layer one, right? And basically understanding that if you want to audit the election, which is what I wanted to do, you need to make sure that the ground underneath you can't change. And so that's where, you know, having your fancy cryptographic proofs and your Merkle trees all tied to Bitcoin ensure that you have an anchor of truth in a sea of lies. And that's where the real work starts, right? Which is basically, if you now have the data, the primary source data that, you know, is used to come up with the results, well, someone's got to take a look at it, right? And that's what we partnered with Stackwork, an awesome company. So shout out to those guys. If you haven't checked them out or don't know who they are, it's stackwork.com. They helped us create a workflow where we basically put all the data that is now timestamped to Bitcoin and we know can't change. And then they helped us create this workflow where on your screen, you're seeing a snippet. It's without the C, so stakwork.com. Sorry about that. So basically, if you have a problem where you have to do a lot of things repeatedly, Stackwork is a very simple way to come up with a process and help you grow. So I went from having zero files to all of a sudden I had 100,000 files and I needed to process them in, you know, 3.2 million database like that. Stackwork is perfect. And you pay people in sats, right? And so literally it's what you look on your screen. It says Comunidad Elefante. It's a handwritten digit. So it's tricky for computers to read this. I just pump in the numbers and boom, I just won 2 points. And I wonder what those points are for. And so basically this is how we got over 1,500 volunteers in Guatemala to process the presidential election in real time on election night.
Oh.
And we
had
our audit was ready for anyone to verify within 24 hours. And so what Shane was saying is on election night, like if you, the media cycle is so quick that if you don't have an audit within 24 hours and don't have the evidence, I don't, like, you won't get another chance. Like, it's literally basically,
you're not going to get another chance
at 2 a.m., 3 a.m.
They'll just gaslight the shit out of you and like disappear the actual ballots.
Yeah, they'll start calling Ohio for whoever at 7 o'clock in the evening when it's actually, we've got 3% of the vote total in. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
And so your logo doesn't allow people to see it, but there's a little number six here that says SAT 6. And you, so in the case of Stackwork, you just click this button and you can paste an invoice. So whoever pastes an invoice into, you know, the Nest or whatever you call this, I can send you 6 sats right now.
They get anybody who's doing the verification work gets paid in sats.
Yes. And so it basically turns elections and the need to audit elections into the fastest way to get sats into the hands of people everywhere and experience their first lightning transaction.
All the incentives are aligned. So everything you've explained so far, that's the thing that I'm observing about all of it, is for people who want honest elections, all of the incentives are aligned. The only people who wouldn't like this is someone who wants to cheat.
Dirty ass politicians.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And if you send me a 6 Satoshi invoice, I will send you the sats right now. Right. So it's literally, we got over 1,500 people to do this. This isn't simple proof anymore, guys. This is what I did as an election auditor. It's called digitalwitness.io. And so it's basically gamifying election audits, because who wants to do data entry work? Like, that's so boring. If you don't have gamification and if your points can't be converted to Satoshis, you're not going to get young people to do this. We found that it was mainly people under the age of 18 that were attracted to this.
We're still looking at the stackwork.com screen.
So I'm just waiting for an invoice for anyone to send me a 6 Satoshi invoice. And
Send an invoice.
Where's Gary when you need him?
Post a 6 Satoshi invoice and I'll send it to you right now. And hope those notes are online, because it would be shame for this to not work live. But so yeah, that's basically what we did. And in the case of Guatemala, so we turned it into a game. And so now these are the top scorers. And I don't know if you can really see it, but it basically
383,000 sets.
That's the top scorer. And so now, 3 years from now, at our next election, I'm going to just put this on a giant billboard. And so I'll remind people. And so you turn elections into a reminder of how many sats you could have earned 4 years ago and what could have happened if you had saved those Satoshis on a punch card. Or
100 years from now, that'd be equivalent of 383,000 US dollars. And somebody would be like, damn, I really should have verified on that
election. When you were 12 or 13 or 14 years old for some extra sats. Holy, you get legendary status. That's the thing. Yeah. Bitcoin is creating legends at the cyclic rate right now, and it is only going to speed up. I hope people, the deep dives in history that are coming for this community, there's not going to be enough recognition to go around. This is huge, Carlos.
Thank you. Very cool. And if you don't trust me, like literally go to digitalwitness.io. I have a documentary that explains everything. And I published a report in March. So if you want to read a 272-page report of the election audit of the last three elections in Guatemala, it's a 92-megabyte download, then you can read through it. And so my promise to Guatemala is I want the 2027 elections of Guatemala to be the most transparent and trustworthy elections in the history of the world. And I think we can do it. And
you understand, like, so Dr. Nick just said Shane is so tickled for good reason. For those of you who don't know, Shane ran for governor of Georgia. And I did not know the story about you were winning by 70 to 30.
That's the 2018 run for U.S. Congress. Yeah. So I've run for U.S. House, I've run for U.S. Senate, and I've run for governor. And the first time when I ran, I went as a Republican because I was like, I can actually win this race, and, you know, went in and played that whole role. And to have it, you know, in the middle of the night, like everybody knows, right? It's like, oh, in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
We'll just shuttle in these extra votes or flip it or do whatever we need to do so that our puppet remains in power at that point where, man, yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm glad I got to stay home with my family. I'm glad I didn't have to go to DC. But at the same time,
they would have loved you in DC.
Oh, I probably, yeah. Well, be careful what I say there. But this is tremendous. Mm. I mean, this is so great for the incentive structure itself. And it just, you keep ticking the boxes. You know, it's the incentive structure is right. You're decentralized. You've got, you know, so many different layers of people actually involved, right? Like you're incentivizing involvement first and foremost, and then you're taking that involvement and you're rewarding every level of involvement for doing the right thing. And you're literally kicking people out and possibly punishing them in a major way for violating that sanctity where everybody else is putting forth their best effort, their best, you know, their time. This corrects so many of the malices that are just cooked into a bad incentive structure from a fiat system. There's not enough praise for what you're doing with this, Carlos, and the guys from Stackworks and everybody else that you're working with. This is huge.
Well, thanks. The message is the U.S. has the elections coming up. We have an opportunity. Everyone's paying attention to the elections. Everyone in the world is paying attention to these elections. And everyone's been told that you can't trust the system. And I can't speak to the national results, but I would bet money that there are Bitcoiners who know people in their communities who are going to do a good job, right? Like they're not everywhere is lost. And we can slow the slow creep. You know, we can stop it in those places that have honest, hardworking people. And so we just, you know, build these tools and are ready and willing to just bring them out to you. Also, for context, Guatemala, it took us 4 days to implement this because this isn't an election solution. It's not a voting solution. It's a digital information solution. And so we just add on whatever.
You're basically auditing the in real time. What the hell's going on?
Well, the audit, you know, let me emphasize, simpleproof.com is just the digital information piece of this, of saying, whatever happens November, there will be digital files. There will be some kind of digital information. And using Simple Proof takes 4 days, less than that, depending on how the system is structured. But it's literally just whatever is in their cloud, whatever is in their servers, we can help them get it on Bitcoin in the next block. So that if they get CrowdStriked, you know, God forbid on election night, right? Like they just prove that they can do it, right? So I wouldn't put it past them. And whoever is running a solid ship, right, a tight ship in their local election, they probably don't know about this, right? They probably don't understand cryptography. They're already kind of swimming against the current with all the madness that, you know, involves the world nowadays. And this is just a quick tool that's like, what's on your cloud? Did you know that you could use Bitcoin to protect against CrowdStrike, the Russians, the Koreans? I mean, whoever is coming at you for cheap. That's the other thing. The election authorities told us once they found out, once we quoted them, which is $1 per file, how we do our process, they said it's that cheap. They actually paid for twice because they wanted to run a simulation a few days prior to just make sure all systems were go, and they were. And so, you know, there's no reason not to do this unless, of course, you're planning to commit election fraud.
Right.
Yeah, I think most people in America aren't worried about the other countries. They're worried about DC right now. And that brings us to our favorite part. This is the part of the show that everybody actually tunes in for. Like, we have to have them sit through the first hour and 15 minutes to get to this point. Everybody knows what time it is.
Who said that? What have we got here? Fucking comedian, private joker.
It's story time, ladies and gents. Once again, our guests do not read the notes before the show, except for
mission briefing. Did you read your mission briefing, Carlos?
No, he's busy.
Did not, look at his face. He did not read the mission briefing. Okay.
Note to Randy out there. Let's back the time to 6:45 for that notification, and then just apprise them of story time. Like maybe it's way too long. I don't know what else is in there, but this is obviously the most important part. We ask our guests to come out here, if you're new to the show, to come out and give us some endearing story, something humorous. You know, a lot of guys talk about, you know, funny stories while they were in the shit. And then obviously there's Bitcoin, which I imagine, especially at this level of what you're doing, you've probably got some stories, and I imagine some of them are pretty hysterical.
Well, yeah, just going into it, it's like literally when I was in the thick of it in 2019, was kind of pushed into the spotlight because I was people knew that I knew how the systems worked, and everyone was caught running around like chickens with their heads cut off when the systems failed, and everyone's just saying, oh my God, like I don't understand, like what computers, you know, oh connections, and they're just completely lost. And so these boomers start to like push me into the front, and they gave me the microphone. I was working anonymously up until this point, and I realized, damn it, like I'm gonna have to like stand up and do this, aren't I? And so I got up and I explained to all these boomers that, you know, you can't trust the data anymore because it's, you know, changed. But there's this thing called SHA. And so I've explained to this room full of politicians and lawyers, all boomers, of like, so think of a SHA as a fingerprint, right? And they're like, uh-huh. And so what happened is like on Sunday when we're supposed to get the files, you like hid everything away and now you're showing me new stuff. It's like, uh-huh. So how do I know that these new files are the same as the old ones? They're like, oh. And so they were, oh, so make sure that the files are going to be stamped with their secure key SHA. And so the next day they come out with this document that I think is the first time the government of Guatemala ever issued a document that said the documents that have to be delivered must include a hash function, is what they used, hash. And so fast forward to a few days later when they're finally going to give me the data, I'm sitting down with the IT guy telling him, well, you know, where are my SHAs, man? Like I got to get your boss says you're going to give this to me. Like, no more excuses. Like, this is the end of the line. I was told midday, noon, that they were going to have to give it to me. And it's already like 6 p.m., right? It's like, am I going to have to call the media and your boss? Because it's a like legal document that says you have to give this with hashes, right? Like, no funny stuff anymore. And the guy's just looking at me with this face. I have a selfie that I probably shouldn't show. Because finally, when he gives me over the thumb drive, I decided to take a selfie with him along with my buddies. And first, we take out all the files. We start to get out the shaz. And wouldn't you know, it's like, it was supposed to be 105,000 and it had 60,000 files in it. I'm like, I mean, are you serious right now? I've been waiting here for 6 hours and you're gonna, you think I'm stupid? Like, and he's just looking at me with this like, and he gets on the phone and like, send me the next thumb drive. And so an hour later, another thumb drive and it's 80,000. I'm like, I'm not leaving until you get me this, the whole thing. Finally, at midnight, he gives me all like 101,000. He's like, I promise, this is all I got. Like, I couldn't get anything else. This is what you get. And we look over everything. And immediately I tell the guy, you have to go wherever you are. And you have to back up everything, man. Because this is the end of the road for you. I don't know what you did to do this, but obviously you're going down. And he's just looking at me with the like deer in headlights, just like, And
wow.
Five days later, dude gets picked up by the cops and he's in chains and he goes to jail.
Man.
Whoa.
This is like...
They pinned it on the IT guy.
It's like... Well, they tried to, right? Yeah.
But 2019, he was... No, they did it. Well, that's the funny part of the story is that that was in 2019. They pinned it on the IT guy, basically said, oh, they mixed up the code. That's why it was a mistake. Like they made a mistake in the code. And that's why he's going to jail. And he was sent to jail along with his lieutenant. So it's two guys, the IT guys. And this is a message to IT guys. Like, you're the ones that are going to be the fall guys, right? So this is for your benefit. You can use Bitcoin to say, wasn't me. In 2023, when they had to do this all over again, well, no one is coming in to try to be the IT guy, right? Like, no one wants that job because everyone knows that's the fastest way to go to jail. And that's basically why they had to do this, right? Because they couldn't find anyone to work for them and they needed to find ways to reduce people's anxiety, particularly their own people, because... You know, it's usually just bad apples at the top, but then the people that get blamed are those at the bottom. And if they saw the guy get sacrificed, then you know, no one's gonna just raise their hands for nothing, right? So, I shouldn't share the selfie it'll be etched in my memory. His face of just deer in headlights, like, yay, I gave away all the files, and then within a week, he guy's in jail.
Oof, justice. It's a word here in the United States we don't ever get to use. So it's a great story.
You know, this is the kind of thing though. It's like just listening to the story of you explaining to all of the officials how it worked with the fingerprint and everything. I can only imagine what would be going through some of these people's minds. It would be like,
oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
You ever hear those stories about like you go in this place and you flick on a light and there's roaches and they just scatter everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like flooding the room with light. I mean, the hard part is going to be getting them to agree to do it, because if they're corrupt, they're not going to want to use this.
Well, that's why don't go for the harder places. Start small. Let's make sure that the towns, the communities that have good people know about this.
And yeah, get like a local level proof of work thing and say, hey, look, we did this. We know it works. We can prove it works. And if you don't want to do this, then why wouldn't you want to do this?
Yeah, in the States, I don't want to pee in anybody's cornflakes here, but most voting laws are determined at the state level. So yeah. Whether what you're using in terms of tech and all that fun stuff is going to be there. That's, it would be great to be able to do it that way. I think there's probably, some proofs of work that would have to get done. But having, the soapboxes of guys that don't want to lose this election at the federal level, I think that would be a great case to have these guys start pushing it, or at least get some traction. So, yeah, let's wrap this thing up.
Carlos, any last thoughts on anything you want to say, anything we can help you out with?
Reach out. This is a 0-1 thing. After November, we can credibly say that Bitcoin protects democracy, but we got to get it in use, right? We need to make sure that we don't lose the opportunity in November, because then come December, we can say that Bitcoin protects democracy. And if you're against Bitcoin, then you're against democracy.
Kamala should be all for this. Or how do you say it? Kamala? Yeah, Kamala. Anyway. Alex?
Yeah, just thanks for being here, dude. That was amazing. I was wondering, I was thinking to myself before the pod, I'm like, it's voting stuff. Maybe it's not going to be that interesting. And then the time just flew by. It was amazing. I'm still blown away. So thanks for being here, man. Very cool. And we'll do what we can to support you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Carlino, I got to say, I didn't know totally what to expect either tonight. And a lot of what you said rendered me speechless, which is not an easy thing to do. looking at this, there's so much in Bitcoin that just makes me so optimistic. And this is one of those giant pieces of the puzzle moving forward, not only here in the United States, but I think around the world, that Bitcoin is going to help incentivize a better communication between each other. And that means obviously representation in the way we form societies and civilization. And you've put forth with your team and the collaborators that you've worked with just such a huge effort in making this better and giving us something practical in terms of proof of work. So my hat's off to you. I can't wait. Maybe at some point after the kids are out, maybe I will get back into politics, and hopefully by then, something like this is running. And maybe that would be the key is, we need enough people in Bitcoin, right? And to everybody out there that's in the sound of my voice, I hate politics as much as everybody else, and probably even more so, understanding the inside of it. As we're moving through this continuum towards hyper-Bitcoinization, you get to that point where, the people who have Bitcoin, who got in early, who are billionaires and millionaires in Bitcoin, who are starting to live off of that, are putting that back into the Bitcoin ecosystem, which will be politicians at some point. I think this is the catalyst that they're going to need to make sure that their money isn't wasted or in vain into a corrupt system, which is their sandbox and not ours. This is going to help drive that Bitcoin hyper, just move Bitcoin along at a huge rate. So I think we're all, very grateful. Thank you for your time tonight. Thank you for everything you're doing, and just absolutely keep up the great work. And everybody else out there, if you want to get involved with Bitcoin Veterans, if you want to get on the mission, you want to be part of this, you've got some ideas on what you want to do, or you just want to help out where you can find us at bitcoinveterans.org. We'll plug you in until next week. Big announcement. We are moving to Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Next week. It will be the first show at that time. Make sure you tune into that. Set a reminder. We'll let everybody know again next week. But yes, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. We've just had some scheduling conflicts, obviously, within our core group here, and want to make sure that we're getting as many guys on the stage as possible during that time. So we will see you guys next Tuesday at that time, 7 p.m. Until then, Carlos, thanks again. Alex, thanks for joining me. Everybody else out there, thanks for being a part of Bitcoin Veterans. We will see you next time.